Hello and welcome to 361 Degrees Podcast. I am Ewan McLeod from Mobile Industry Review. Now, I want to point out that that was the music that was almost from that Mrs. Robinson film. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, first of all, Mr. Smith, could you introduce yourself?
Yes, hello, I am Ben Smith from Wireless Worker, yes, hello. And it wasn't Mrs. Robinson music, anyway, I chose that, I like that, it's very nice music
indeed. It is so very much Mrs. Robinson, and if anything, it puts us over the age of 40 for the listening bracket, I think.
Well, I have to warn you, you've only been in 15 seconds into hosting this podcast, and I'm already thinking about not letting you do it again. Anyway, let's introduce Rafe.
Yes, well, I think it's very high-quality music in keeping with the podcast. And yes, hello, I'm Rafe Blanford from All About Symbian.
Right, well, I wanted to talk, this podcast, episode 7, I wanted to talk about phones. And I know we've been discussing the industry in previous podcasts, but now I want to talk about what is the favourite and key handsets in your life. Now, I think I've owned maybe 40 or 50 handsets in my my lifetime, and some of them really stand out. And the reminiscing, the nostalgia, I think, does have some value. So here's what I'd like to do.
You know the problem with nostalgia, isn't it?
What's that?
There's a terrible problem with nostalgia.
Tell me.
It's not what it used to be.
Ben, I think you can be guaranteed. To make that joke every quarter, I think at least. Okay.
You're very right.
No, I think you should keep it in. I think you should keep it live. We're rolling. Now, before we begin, I think it's important that we say hello to Mike Steed, who is our key listener. Hello to everybody at All About Symbian, Mobile Industry Review, and Wireless Worker, but you don't count. You don't count because you haven't posted a comment on 361 Degrees. Hold on a minute, 361degre.es, our microsite, so you've got to go there. Okay, first up, I want to talk about handsets that mean something to you, okay? And then second, I want to talk about handsets that have been synonymous and influential in the industry. So, Ben, leaders, take us from the top here. What is your favorite handset ever?
I'm just trying to think. Actually, we were talking about this offline, and I think the one that made the biggest difference to me was probably the P800, which was the Sony Ericsson P800. I don't know if you remember. It was kind of light blue. It was sold in the UK at least. It was sold exclusively through Orange, and I switched to Orange to get a contract with it, and I rushed out. It was probably the first handset I ever went down to a store on release day, having read about it before it came out, and purchased. And it was Rafe, you'll know the platform stuff because I'm a bit vague about this, but it was running Symbian, wasn't it? Although not the same one as Nokia's
or something.
Yes, it was running UIQ2,
And it was actually quite a nice UI, and it was really fat and really big. You know, it wasn't the best phone I ever had, but it was the first one that was probably felt like a real smartphone, and I loved it at the time. I absolutely loved it.
I can't believe Ben said that. He's basically stolen my handset. This was my very first mobile phone that I owned entirely myself, that hadn't been bought for me or I hadn't borrowed from someone else. And
oh,
it was like, Ben,
God,
I went
how
down
young
on
are
the
you?
Opening day. I went down on opening day to the Orange handset store and walked out with a very proud owner. And, you know, some of the features really stick with me. The lovely blue plastic, the really flaky stylus that kept falling off the side. You know, that really impressive camera, which it wasn't much more than VGA, but it was in many senses the very first smartphone that kind of also integrated a lot of that PDA functionality. It went beyond what the 7650 and the had come before, and it wasn't, you know, the big communicator style. And I think that was, we're talking about year 2000, something like that. It was 2001, maybe.
I think I got. I think it would have been about 2001. I mean, I suppose we probably should have done some research before then. But I think it was 2001. I was actually working up in Glasgow at that point, and I braved walking through the centre of Glasgow, to queue up at the Orange shop, to buy one. And the guys in the store all had them as demonstrators. And I mean, a bit like you, I then sort of immediately lost or broke the. It was a. For anyone who's not familiar with it, it was like a touchscreen tablet that you could, with a resistive screen that you could write on with a stylus. And the stylus was flat and it clipped on the side of the device and had a propensity to fall off. So I got through all of those really, really quickly. It didn't have a pen-like stylus like so many other devices that came after it. And it also had a keyboard which sort of folded down to allow you access to the full screen, or folded up so that only half the screen was visible in a kind of a more traditional format. And I found that actually sitting on those in pubs, especially putting it in jeans back pockets, was a surefire way to snap those off. So I was then a regular visitor to Orange stores around the country for about the next 18 months as I replaced the various bits I snapped off. But I mean, Ewan, the reason I picked that as my most influential one was it was the first ever phone that gave me a taste of what a smartphone could be, because before then I had phones I loved. So I had a T28, which was an Ericsson one, which was that tiny, tiny flat flip phone with a massively thick aerial on it. And that was the first ever sort of really tiny portable phone, and I loved that. And before that, I had a whole bunch of sort of dumb Nokias, and I really lusted after my friend's Nokia 7110, which, Rafe, that was the Matrix phone, wasn't it, that had the kind of the sprung-loaded flip-down mouthpiece.
That's right. Everyone thinks of it as the Matrix phone, although it's not actually the Matrix phone, but it was.
Of course, it wasn't actually the one in the film, was it?
That's right. It sort of came out just afterwards, and yes, it was known as the banana phone, or the one that you could sort of deadly weapon as the bottom side shot off and cut someone's neck off.
Yeah.
But just as you're talking about the P800, I keep my phones. I've actually got the P800 in my hand now.
You have not.
It's that lovely blue shade. And also, one of the things we haven't talked about yet was the jog wheel that you had on the side of the device, which is something I still like to this day, which was a way of scrolling up and down through menus very quickly, and it was actually went in four different directions. You could go up and down as well. So yes, I thought I'd just get that out and impress everyone with my geek credentials, but also rather embarrassing credentials.
And I actually I met someone the other day who still uses a P800. He still carries it around. Now it's an ex colleague of mine, and he loves it. He's talking about buying an iPhone, but he's had it, you know, all that time, and still it's in his hands. It's still survived and it's still useful.
That shouldn't be allowed.
The other thing I remember about that, Rafe, is although it could do data, couldn't it? At that point, there weren't many people offering data services, so I used this kind of dial-up service with Orange, where you dialed a phone number and had a call open, and you were billed by the minute. It was like kind of dial-up modem at home, wasn't it?
That's right, circuit switch data, and it was, yes, just like the traditional modems, and worked in the same way. Of course, this was back in 2G days, so even if you did get a data connection, and even with the dial-up, it was pretty slow. So although there was a version of Opera for this, this was not sort of a web surfing handset as we think of it today, although at the time it was very much ahead of its time. But I do remember I had it on the Orange contract, as we've been talking about, and I really splashed out because I got the Orange World 5 megabyte package so that I could use 5 megabytes of data a month.
Was that stuff unlimited?
What about you, McLeod?
Oh dear. Right, well, so you were talking about the Sony Ericsson P800, right? Now I'm just looking at Wikipedia, the P800 apparently was introduced in 2002, right?
Oh, missed.
Now, I really liked, now you're probably not going to remember this one, and we do need to link to it in the post. It's a Sony CMD-Z5.
Now, with the fold-down mouthpiece.
This is it. Do you remember this one?
I do. I loved that.
People who were posing about.
Gone.
I wasn't Blanford. Old enough to own one because, of course, I think I was still in short trousers when they were out. My mum and dad wouldn't let me go and buy my own phone, but, you know. Well, I think it's just struck me, actually. I think McLeod is younger than I am anyway, so I don't know why I'm doing old jokes. But anyway, tell us about the Sony.
77, Smith. That's when I was born.
See? Younger than me.
Well, when were you?
76. See? Like a fine wine, I've matured with age.
Right, okay, so this CMD Z5, this was apparently announced in 1999 or 2000. I've got two websites that give a different time. Now, it was not a smartphone. It was a small, almost a candy bar, but quite, it was 88 centimeters tall. Sorry, not 88 centimeters, 8.8 centimeters tall. So small, just smaller than a Mars bar kind of size. Gorgeous device. It was the first phone I ever had that had an Internet Explorer WAP browser. Now this, I need to explain that this was a Sony CMD Z5, not a Sony Ericsson. This is before Sony and Ericsson got together. So this was Sony sending out one of their best handsets on the market. It was dual band, which I thought was amazing. I really liked the fact I could browse web pages. Yes, the web pages looked rubbish, but however, what was really impressive and what I used to, you know, wow girls or geeks was when you ran the browser, the Internet Explorer E icon would appear full screen, and that just looked amazing.
Was it actually like the Microsoft one? Was it a proper tie-up with Microsoft?
No, nothing to do. It basically just, it was a Sony phone that happened to run the Microsoft Windows IE WAP browser. It just had a WAP basically the IE logo on it, basically.
Okay.
But that was, it was pretty cool. Now, it had a jog dial, like the P800. The jog dial, very, very important. That was really smart, really good. And then the number one feature that I loved on this device was voicemail. It did voicemail on the device. So what I mean by that is when people would phone you and you couldn't answer it, or you chose not to answer it, you could actually choose to hear you could hear them, and the voicemail was recorded on the phone. So you could actually interrupt it on the phone. I thought that was nothing short of amazing, gents. What do you reckon?
Well, what happened when you went through a tunnel and like there was no reception to the phone? How did the call get through then?
Well, I think I don't actually know what happened then, because one would imagine that if someone was leaving a voicemail message, what would happen? That's shocking. Someone's leaving a voicemail message for you and then it cuts off.
Yeah, because of poor signal.
you'd probably, at that time, you'd probably blame your own signal, actually. So my one was the CMD Z5, and I actually did go and buy one again from eBay for a tenner a while ago, and it really is amazing. I do wonder why these companies don't go back to some of these amazing handsets. I got so much love for that phone. The battery lasted for ages. It was just amazing. Anyway, right. Next question for you, gents, is I'd like you to go through. So I need two more phones from you. I want another favorite from each of you, and then I want next time, or shortly, and the next round, I want a seminal handset. Okay, so right now, Ben, what's your next favorite handset? Pick out another one.
It's tricky. I think I'm going to cheat and have two, although I'll explain why. So the first one, and Rafe, you're the Nokia nerd, so correct me. It's the one I had in 1999, and it was, I think it was a 6210, so it was just a boring kind of candy bar style phone with a little stubby aerial on it, and that, in that respect, that was nothing special. But it was the first phone I ever had with line 2, so it had two phone numbers going to it, and it was the one where I had my personal number and my work number, you know, going to the same handset, and I could make, you know, calls from one and receive calls on the other, and it was just like science. And everybody who rang me was amazingly impressed that I had, you know, two numbers on there. And the phone wasn't very special, but it was one of the few. And I think it was only Orange was the only network that ever implemented it that did, you know, that kind of fancy two-line thing. But for me, the next one that was kind of seminal, and I kind of had this bizarre love-hate relationship with it, was the O2 XDA, which I think it was sold in other markets, not just on O2, but it was HTC's entry into the UK market. It was a Windows Mobile, tablet. It was a big sort of handheld resistive screen touch phone, and it ran Windows Mobile, and it was slow, and it crashed, and it was unreliable. But for me, that was the first time a business work ever gave me a handset to use as a business tool. It was all hooked up to my work email, and it was more than a BlackBerry, because at that point for me BlackBerries were just email, because I could do web browsing on it and it synced my contacts, and it was the full Monty. I mean, features that I think, you know, quickly got overtaken, but for me that was a real wow, because it was when smartphones suddenly became, you know, kind of important in your day job. And then, you know, obviously you know, kind of wireless worker kind of emerged from then, sort of what, almost 9-10 years of working with phones after that.
And Mr. Blandford, what's yours?
It's incredibly difficult choosing just one, and I'm going to sort of cop out a little bit here and say N95, but it was for me a phone that, you know, did change things quite a lot, and I was actually fortunate enough to be in New York for the launch event of that particular device, and I can remember actually writing about it sort of the day before, and bizarrely, for whatever reason, Nokia press relations didn't seem to have a problem with that. I think it did cause some reactions later on, but then you know, it was picked up by some other blogs and they accused me of making it all up, because this couldn't possibly be true, because there was no way a handset could combine a 5-megapixel camera, GPS, and at the time it was really trendsetting. You know, it really did break the mold. As it happened, the software on it when it first came out was really quite buggy and didn't work very well, and it took quite a few software updates to get to be the point where it became the handset that was really, in a lot of ways, Nokia's last hit smartphone, as according to a lot of people. I think that underplays some of the handsets that came later, but nonetheless, this was the idea of the handset that combined everything into one. It was convergence at its peak, but it also started introducing the idea of services. So it had a early version of Nokia Maps on it, which was basically just a rebrand of MapGate's Smart to Go software, and you know, I loved that phone. You know, I took many images with it, and it was in some ways the birth of that modern smartphone. What had gone before was really just, you know, other phones on steroids with extra bits, but this was really something that really broke the mold. And I imagine both of you probably owned N95 or N95 8GB at one point. And did you find it, you know, sort of similarly, you know, rather awe-inspiring when you look back on it and consider what it was at the time?
Well, I mean, the N95 was, I was thinking of putting that on my list, but for this conversation, but I thought that you, Rafe, would probably pick on it. I mean, I remember walking through Liverpool Street Station in London and seeing the advertisement saying N95. The multimedia computer or something like that, you know, has arrived. And, you know, it was a phenomenal device. Absolutely phenomenal. Smith, what did you have a 95?
No, I feel like a complete letdown, because I never owned an N95. But bear with me, there's a reason. Because at that point, I was absolutely in love with my E61, which was Nokia's kind of big, fat, BlackBerry-alike device, and I had it all hooked up to Mail for Exchange, and I was really, really comms focused. So when the N95 came along, it kind of passed me by really for a little while, certainly as I was changing handsets. But I then immediately rushed out and bought the N82 as soon as I possibly could, which was in many respects had the same sort of feature set as the N95, didn't it? But it didn't have the slidey screen, it was smaller form factor, and if memory serves, Rafe, the camera on it, because of the Xenon flash, actually was better for a lot of people, and I was very camera focused at that point.
Yes, it was really Nokia's second big camera phone, following on from the, I think it was the N93 or the N90, which are the two transformers. And yes, I think in a lot of ways the N82 was almost a better handset than the N95 in terms of the build quality and the overall features. You did get that Xenon flash, which, I mean, takes pictures, which even now, you know, are still quite impressive looking back on them. They're sort of certainly equivalent to what my digital camera was at the time. And you know, that Xenon flash, yes, just brings back the memories.
Back when Nokia used to produce epic hardware, but really unfortunately buggy software. Oh, no, hang on a minute. I've gone down a rabbit hole there. So, McLeod, what about you?
Yes, right. So my second favourite is actually a BlackBerry.
Boo!
Come on. Hold on a minute. Listen, the BlackBerries, when they arrived into the marketplace, were phenomenal. So let me just give you a background there. It's a BlackBerry 7230, right, which was the blue plastic one, right? Okay, and they arrived in the UK on 02, but you had, in order to use them, you had to go and buy an exchange server and then put BlackBerry Exchange or a BlackBerry server on top of it, I think.
So it was only available for business users. This was back in the days before Biz, which is the kind of the one that lets you get your Gmail and Hotmail, came along. Yeah?
Exactly. So you had to actually be a Bez customer. You had to buy a minimum of 5 handsets. And I just thought, oh, I can't do that. Then T-Mobile, I think I'm right in saying, T-Mobile actually introduced Biz. So i.e. instant email for the consumer. And it was, for me, phenomenal. I'll tell you why. The device itself, you know, I could take it or leave it. And particularly given what Nokia was doing at the time, it wasn't, you know, definitely wasn't amazing. But the battery did last 5 days, okay? And email arrived instantaneously. And the thing that really got me excited here by this device was I was able, finally, first time ever, a point I did with the XDA, but it wasn't as cool, with BlackBerry, I could actually get off a plane somewhere in Europe or sometimes in the States, depending on the time of year, or sorry, the year, you know, we're talking here, because this, I think this was back in 2003 or 2004, I could get off the plane, and then the email would arrive in, and I would be replying to email, and my clients wouldn't know or care that I was in a different country, and that was critical to me, right? I could do what I wanted, I could take the day off, and still be able to do my email, and still be connected to clients. Now, seminal handsets that you think transform the marketplace. So Ben, over to you. What was your seminal? What was your handset that really changed things for the marketplace?
Well, obviously the temptation is to say iPhone, the original iPhone, but I think that there's if you think about it a bit more, there's some sort of more hidden ones behind the scenes, and I'm going to get the name wrong, and I'm sure Rafe will jump in and correct me, but I think, for me, one of the earliest ones that changed the market was the Orange's SPV handset, which was like a candy bar Windows mobile device that had regular keys.
And that's right. It was actually the very first Windows mobile device, and it was SPV was the first one. They then did follow-ups, which stood for sound, picture, vision, and it was also, I think, the HTC Canary. So it was, you know, a really big deal after Microsoft had sort of messed up the Sendo thing. HTC stepped into the breach, and okay, it didn't have a camera, but in other respects, it was, you know, had everything modern smartphone we'd expect it from.
And there were two reasons I kind of think this is seminal. One is it was the birth of HTC. In my life, anyway. You know, I didn't know it was HTC at the time, but I mean, look at what they are now. They were very, very smart about producing operator-branded handsets until the point where they were big enough to then have their own identity, and they've grown that, you know, over time. And let's face it, I think they still produce a huge amount of operator-branded stuff as well, although the Huawei's and the ZTE's are beginning to sort of creep into that. But the reason I was saying that is that that one was the first phone that was sold, to my knowledge, in the UK, and this is, you know, a very UK-centric conversation, so apologies to anyone who's listening from outside, with a data tariff. It came with an unlimited data plan, and certainly at launch, as I remember it, it really was unlimited, or certainly so large that you couldn't use it. Now, later on, I believe that was later limited, and it went back to a sort of a more traditional model, but it was the first ever handset where they realised that to get the value out of this smartphone system, it wasn't just about what was on the handset, it's about how connected it was. And, you know, years and years later, you see things like the original iPhone coming along and people wowing about, oh, it only comes with these tariffs that have data, and that's revolutionary. But actually, all the way back before that, the Orange SPV changed the UK market.
Mr. Blandford?
Rafe's flipping through his big Rafepedia looking for model numbers for me, I think.
Sorry, I was just fondling my SPV phone. That's also...
Have you got the SPV 500, Rafe? C500. The rounded one. I love that.
This drawer must be amazingly big. Rafe, will you take a picture of just some of these phones on your desk, and we'll use it as the image for this podcast?
I will. It might be a bit embarrassing because there's quite a few phones in this drawer. But anyway, to answer the question, I'm actually going to go back in time a little bit. I didn't ever own this handset, but the thing that still amazes me most about mobile phones is the ability to pick it up, dial a number and get pretty much anywhere in the world from wherever you happen to be. And that still feels like magic to me with all the stuff we've added on. And that's really down to the GSM communication standard. So to represent that, I'm actually going to pick out the very first GSM phone, which was the Nokia 1011. And it was, in fact, here, you know, bits of trivia we'd like to provide you with on 361 Degrees. It was called the 1011 because it refers to its launch date, which was on the 10th of November. I'm just trying to remember the year. I think it was 1992. It doesn't look like, you know, the typical Nokias we have today. Didn't even have the Nokia ringtone, for example. That didn't come in until the 2100 series. But that as a sort of landmark for the mobile phone industry, you know, it goes back a long time. But all the stuff we talk about, smartphones and all the services, it did all start out with voice. And still that sort of sense of communication, that sense of wonder of being able to pick up the handset and reach someone on the other side of the world, still, you know, it still amazes me the way all of that works. And so for that reason, picking out the Nokia 1011.
It's like a walk through history. Rafe, Ewan, what about you, mate?
Right. Okay. So my seminal handset is actually one that's been mentioned already. Well, no. Okay. I'll go for the E61i. So the E61 is the one that Ben mentioned earlier. The E61i was Rafe, could you briefly introduce that?
The E61i, yeah, it was the follow-up to the E61, but actually made an attempt to make it look elegant. The E61 looked like a calculator, and the E61i didn't actually introduce all that much in the way of new features, but it did improve the keyboard and actually had a better web browser in it, and that was deemed the critical functionality to make it look shinier, and it was sort of black as opposed to silver.
Right. See, now, I do love the fact that you can actually say, Rafe, what's the difference between X and Y, and boom! He is an encyclopedia. Fascinating. So thank you for that, Rafe. So the 61i, the reason that was seminal for me was, maybe 5 years before that, I'd been using the BlackBerry. Phenomenal. Loved it. I loved this instant email. The problem with instant email on the BlackBerry was I didn't have BES, right? I didn't have I didn't have the facility to map my folders and my inbox beautifully. So if I deleted something on my BlackBerry, it would not delete in my Outlook. So that was annoying. And the expense of getting a Bez was just, you know, I didn't even bother thinking about that. So with the E61i, what really rocked my planet and changed my world was good mobile messaging. And it's still available. It's actually in, it's really going great guns on Android and an iPhone at the minute, the Good platform. And it's GOOD. good.com. But at this time, it must have been 4 or 5 years ago, I was able to hook my exchange account into my Nokia phone. I didn't want a BlackBerry at that point. I wanted a Nokia handset, the E61, which had a camera in it. It was pretty good quality. The device I absolutely loved. And good mobile messaging gave me exchange capabilities in a standalone application on the device, and it was phenomenal. Again, it was the messaging. The messaging is key for me. The I do so much business on the handset. I need to be able to get my contacts, my calendar, and my inbox syncing properly. So the 61 with a keyboard, the 61i with a keyboard, and the flexibility of the software on the good mobile messaging software was just. What's the word? I'm lost for words. It was phenomenally good. Gents, can we try and mention a few obscure phones or different handsets? Ben, why don't you go first?
You were gonna absolutely piss yourself laughing, but I owned the first Motorola Razr.
Hold on a minute. I paid 500 quid for my Razr.
Oh, I thought I was going to have a walk of shame on this podcast, but you've just blown that away, because I waited till just after launch, and I went and it was my first ever Vodafone contract, and it's strange actually how kind of it's only very recently that I've started to have handsets that aren't kind of directly, I don't directly associate with a network, because they've, you know, the networks brought them out first, or you can only get it on that network or whatever. And partly that's because I just own far more handsets now, but I think partly also that, you know, I kind of, most of the, there's very few sort of operator exclusives across full ranges now. But yeah, the Razr, and you know, it was a bloody awful phone, but form factor and hardware wise, it was really impressive. And I told all my friends at the time, oh, look, you know, Motorola are really going to be something big. Look how, you know, amazingly slim and attractive this phone is. And yeah, you know, actually, it was pretty awful to use, actually, and the menus were horrendous. But it looked pretty cool. I was pretty pleased with myself, and I stayed with Vodafone for a while after that. Although I think it was about probably the last phone I ever bought because it was a network exclusive. The other one I suppose I want to mention, and I'm really struggling to remember now, was I owned a Philips handset, and I can't even remember what the model number was, but the thing that stood out for me, it was a flat candy bar, quite an elegant looking phone, you know, sort of way back, kind of probably in the mid late 90s, and it had sort of plastic keys, and I thought, oh, you know, Philips is going to be a really premium brand because it looked really nice. And I was kind of embarrassed to say I bought quite a few handsets just on the face of the way they looked. But to be honest, it's back in the day when you couldn't even send text messages to people on other networks. So, you know, at that point, it was all about the hardware. So, yeah, I owned a Razer and a Philips phone that were pretty weird. Although, for the most part, those are really the only ones that stand out for me in sort of my personal walk of shame. Rafe, you probably were born with a Nokia in your hand, weren't you?
Yes. Well, it's sort of, I'm just trying to think of non-Nokia handsets. There are quite a few that have gone through my pores, but I was just thinking of the 5110 and the Nokia Countdown, which was the 3210 with those Express-On covers. But to move away from Nokia, I wanted to choose two phones that are kind of relevant to the US audience, perhaps a little more. And those are the Sidekick, and it was the original Sidekick. I can't remember the exact model number.
Did you have one in the UK? Did they even sell them?
They did sell them in the UK, and I didn't actually buy one. I did trial one for a while from a friend, but in the end, I sort of didn't really get into it. I never quite got that kind of Sidekick addiction, which I know some people did. And in some ways, that was the kind of the forerunner of the Crackberry addiction, which came along later on. So I think that was pretty significant in its own way. But the other one I'd pick out is the Trio 180, which was the first Palm telephone.
Oh, wow.
And we've sort of said goodbye to Palm effectively. Yes, WebOS has come along, but, you know, and so it's kind of a phone from yesteryear. But in its way, it was, you know, it was pretty far ahead of its time. I mean, this is back in 2002, so it's predating an awful lot of the BlackBerrys. The BlackBerrys came along and stole its lunch in a way. And for those that don't remember, it did have that QWERTY keyboard and sort of was a flip down thing and a monochrome screen. So, you know, it was back when we still had monochrome screens. But it then had lots of that came along after, you know, the Trio 270, 300, up to the Trio 600, which was the Palm OS 5 one, I think, with the camera, 2003. And that was, I think I'm right in saying, the last one from Handspring, although that might have been the 650.
Right then, I've got a final non-Nokia or BlackBerry handset. And it's a Sony, sorry, I was going to say it's not a Sony, it's a Motorola. Gents, do you ever remember something called the SLVR, the Motorola Sliver L7?
I've got one in my drawer.
Oh God! Was that the Razer without the flip?
It basically, I think that's a good way of describing it. It was 96 grams. It was 4.9 centimeters. No, millimeters. 49 millimeters. What does that mean? 4.9 centimeters. That's wrong. I'm reading the GSM Arena thing and trying to translate it into centimeters. Anyway, it was 4.9 or 49 millimeters. What I mean to say is it's ultra slim. And let me tell you, this was one of the most embarrassing moments of my phone career. I was sitting with a series of friends from university. And I am the geek, the ultra geek in my group of friends at university. And we decided to meet up. A couple of years after university, after we'd left, and I was sitting around, I think, I can't remember what handset I had, but I was astonished, absolutely astonished, shocked and horrified when a guy called Tom Crampin, okay, when he brought out a handset, checked it and said, oh, my wife's calling, answered the call, hung up. And I pay attention to these things, and I'm thinking, the hell is that phone? Oh my God, that is an amazing device. Oh my God, it's slim, and it's a candy bar format. It's not the Razer style. And he had it. He used it, the suit pocket to store it. and it didn't weigh down the suit pocket at all. And this was that was amazing, you know, back in 2005. It was quad band, the device. It had 5 megabytes free memory. It was pretty amazing stuff, and I was blown away. I actually had to go back and search for it because I didn't want to ask the guy, what is that phone you've got? Because that would be far too embarrassing for me. And I was astonished that he had one. That really stands out in my mind as a, oh my God, that's an amazing device at that point, because it was so, so thin. Do you remember it?
I remember it, although by that point I think I'd owned a Razer for long enough to know that I was never going to use a Motorola yes. device again. I mean, to be fair to them, they've launched some pretty competent Android devices since, but I'm afraid they went in my... They had a black mark from me for a very long time.
Agreed.
So, we're pushing on for time, really, so we should probably wrap up. I guess maybe, you know, what we should say then is perhaps we should each just say... the most important feature or handset or device manufacturer going forwards. Now we've talked about a load of people who've shaped, you know, kind of our handset buying decisions, and you know, actually a load of brands and things that we think have changed the market over the years. Who do you think is going to have influence in the future? Because the thing that strikes me is a whole bunch of people we've reeled off have vanished into obscurity. So Ewan?
Oh dear, that's a difficult one. A very difficult one. Okay, this is a semi-easy answer, I suppose, but I think still valid. I think Apple still have game. I'm looking at the iPhone 4 at the moment, and it looks really old, right? It's really staid now. I think it's really boring. I want to see what Apple do next, and I think what they do next could well be really exciting or really, really dull.
Rafe?
I'm tempted to sort of pick out one of the Asian manufacturers to avoid saying Nokia, given what everyone's going to say if I say Nokia. And I do think ZTE and Huawei are going to be incredibly important going forward, representing those kind of local manufacturers in the Chinese and the Indian markets. But I'm also going to say Nokia because I can do so, given what I write about. You know, Nokia is obviously in a low patch at the moment, but they really did pioneer the modern mobile phone and in many ways the modern smartphone as well. And I do believe, you know, that they can come back. And I think people sometimes forget their unprecedented scale. Even today, they do sell more mobile phones than anywhere else. And in terms of the number of people they reach, as a consumer company, they reach more people than anyone else. It's about 1.5 billion people. And just think about that on a, you know, the scale of the planet we're talking about. One in every five people is reached by Nokia in some shape or form. And that kind of scale is pretty hard to really get your mind around. And so I think going forward, you know, they will recover. You know, their smartphone stuff has been poor in recent years, but they've been pushing out the feature phones. And I believe in the future they'll continue to do so in both areas. And it will be a company we continue to talk about for years to come, and will, you know, set the shape of mobile just as much as Apple and Google are doing so.
So you've stolen my thunder, because I was going to say Huawei. Since you've stolen those guys, I think LG. I think at the moment LG is a bit in the wilderness, but they're a huge, huge brand. They've got big money behind them. And I think actually as we see some of the various platforms sort of, you know, fade away, and we see a bit of aggregation and this kind of stuff, you know.
And what makes you think LG rather than Samsung, Ben?
Because I think Samsung's already huge and slow and probably going to now struggle with its scale. And I think LG has the size and the appetite to actually compete. You know, they're the ones with something to prove, whereas I think Samsung's well embedded with all the major manufacturers. And I'm sure it was going to be big and successful, but I think if you look at people who are going to make a difference, who are going to, you know, actually cause a change in the market, that's them to me. The only other thing I would say is, of course, with Nokia adopting Windows Phone, that means we can have Windows Phone Virtu handsets. And my God, I want one of those. I don't think I can ever afford it, but I really want a premium handset at some point in my life, just so I can say I've owned one, like a Rolex or a Montblanc pen, you know, just for the prestige of owning one. And those could actually be the first handsets where you wouldn't be embarrassed to turn it on, because while you and I were in Prague, we went into the Virtu shop, didn't we? We did some interviews,
and
we got to handle some of those handsets, and they were beautiful. So yeah, I want one of those, but I don't think they're going to change the market. It's just something I want. So if Virtu are listening, please send me a free one. Next podcast, we don't know what it's going to be on, where we're going to record it, or what we're going to be discussing, but there will be prizes, that much I can promise you. So yes, that's very exciting. Okay, say goodnight, McLeod.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, Rafe.
Goodnight, everybody.
Okay, thank you everyone for listening very much. I hope you've enjoyed this slightly more relaxed podcast. Be sure to let us know if you didn't in the comments. Goodnight.